Nothing beyond his one white sleeve announcing permanent participation in that most Masonic rite, the Annus Dialogorum. His hair is black. His skin, a healthy, vaguely Persian brown. But I will not bore you with the genetics of a lion that has not worn a nation strat insignia these 10 generations. There is no allegiance for a guildbreaker, but the Empire. Nor a more unwelcome presence on this doorstep than a guildbreaker. I'm looking for member Occam Senir, Martin called through the intercom. The watchman of the house stayed inside, so only words met the intruder. Is the world about to end? No? Then go away. I have 800 million lives to oversee. Not possible. The Mason's tone, if not his words, apologized. I'm here to investigate last night's security breach. Martin let the computer flash his credentials. I have a warrant. I sent for our own police, not a polylaw. I know this is a humanist bash, and I will absolutely respect your hive sovereignty, but as a globally essential property, you fall under Romanova's jurisdiction. They assigned me. You think just because your bash pounces around the Sanctum Sanctorum, you can waltz in here and improve on my security? I don't believe Martin had ever before heard his boshmate's positions in the Masonic Hive's most honored guard used as an insult. He managed not to flinch. Are you member Occam Senir? I am. Occam pronounced with relish, as if, with all the lives in history laid out before him, he would have chosen this one. Martin gave a suitably respectful nod. This isn't a simple security breach. You've been framed for grand theft. We have your tracker ID logged entering the crime scene in Tokyo late last night, and 5 million euros appeared in your bank account this morning. I know it's absurd to suggest that anyone in your bash would commit a theft for profit, but I need your cooperation to find out why someone would set up something so implausible. The fact that there was also a break-in here last night can't be coincidence. The door relented at last, revealing a man of dark Indian stock to match his sister Thisbe and a physique beyond common athleticism. His shirt and pants, once plain, were now a labyrinth of doodles, black spirals, cross-hatching, and hypnotic swirls, though he wore them as indifferently as if the cloth had never tasted ink. Only his humanist boots mattered. Veins of knife-bright steel framing a surface of pale, ice-gray leather, real leather, which had once guarded the taut flanks of a living deer that Occam slew himself. Like Martin, Occam wore no sign of hobby or of nation strat, nothing but his hive boots and the overpowering self-confidence of a man who guards something so vital that the law will let him kill for it. Ancient civilizations, east and west, knew the special breath of power granted by the right to kill. That's what made sword and fasces marks of dominion, lord over peasant, male over female. Magistrate over petitioner. Our centuries of peace have so perfected non-lethal force that even police serve content without the right to kill. But we are not fools. To those who protect the Commonwealth entire, the guards around the Olenyuk virus lab, the Sanctum Sanctorum, and to Occam here, we grant any means necessary. A knife, a branch, even that deadly instrument, the fist, to guard a million lives. Even if they never exercise this rarest right, still somehow every glance and gesture of such guardians still breathes the ancient force of knighthood. I am Occam Senir. What is it that I am supposed to have stolen? Martin nodded respect. The unpublished Black Sakura 710 list. Scorn deepened on Occam's face. Who'd pay 5 million for a vacuous editorial that goes to press in 2 days? I could give you a nice long list, but I don't know who'd pay 5 million to frame you. Did you visit the Black Sakura office yesterday? Have you ever dealt with them at all? Occam still blocked the doorway, stubborn as a sculpture in its niche. If I cared about newspapers, I'd pick the Olympian or El País. The paper's absence was reported at 7 o'clock p.m. Tokyo time, 6 a.m. your time. Any chance you might have taken your tracker off in the hours shortly before that? Paper? Yes. The stolen list was a handwritten manuscript on paper. Black Sakura is antiquarian that way. Occam's face grew harder. That's what my breach was? An intruder left a piece of paper in the house with Japanese writing on it? Martin swallowed. May I see it? I do have jurisdiction. He let the warrant flicker across Occam's lenses. The humanist drew back with a mastiff's reluctance. Don't touch anything without asking. Understood. The mason crossed the threshold with the tiptoe reverence he usually reserves for his own capital. There was little in the entryway apart from an ankle-high security robot, which let itself be seen to remind the visitor of its myriad hidden kin. As loyal humanists, the Sanir Weeksbooth Bash did try their best to line the entrance hall with the traditional relics of triumphs, but since most of them did little but their work, and their celebrity member keeps his home a secret, their tiny spattering of diplomas and pictures, Thisbe's trophies, Cato's book cover, drowned on the walls like an unfinished mural. Is that judgment in the eyes of this young guildbreaker? Smugness as he surveys the poor showing of the Sanir Weeksbooths, whose name rivals his own in the triumphant annals of the Bash system? I researched which of the two is really older, since so many Bashes form and dissolve with every generation that any famous Bash which lasts more than three will spawn the rumor of antiquity. I found what I must call a noble tie. Regan Makoto Cullen broke with her great teacher Adolf Richter Brill on November 4th, 2191. Break with is easy to say, but not so easy to do. To face the man who has been your patron, teacher, foster father for 25 years, the man all Earth hails as the great mind of the century, who mapped the psyche in undreamt of detail, who revolutionized education, linguistics, justice, to face him down and say, "Sir, you are wrong. So wrong that I shall turn the world against you." It's not the numbers, not these rare psyches you're charting that stimulate great progress. It's groups. I've studied the same inventors, authors, leaders that you have, and the thing that most reliably produces many at once, the effect you've worked so hard to replicate, is when people abandon the nuclear family to live in a collective household, 4 to 20 friends, rearing children and ideas together in a haven of mutual discourse and play. We don't need to revolutionize the kindergartens. We need to revolutionize the family. This heresy, this Bash, which Cullen shortened from Ibasho, a Japanese word like home but stronger, this challenge to Brill's great system, Cullen did not dare present without extensive notes. In those notes, still held as relics in Brill's Institute, you will find the test Bashes Cullen set up in the 2170s, including both Weeksbooth and Guildbreaker. Is that sound the computers? Martin half-whispered, not daring to touch the walls, which hummed as if channeling some distant stampede. Generators, Occam answered. We can power the system for 2 weeks, even if main and secondary both fail. The processors are farther back. He led Martin on to the Bash House's central chamber, a high, broad living room ringed with cushy gray sofas, with a glass back wall that looked down over the next tiers of the sloping city to the crashing blue of the Pacific. The western sunlight through the window cast a halo around the room's famed centerpiece, the pudgy, pointed oval silhouette of Mukta. You know her from your schooling, duly memorized alongside the Nina, the Pinta, and Apollo 11. But you do not know her as we who walked those halls know her. Her shadow across the carpet, her texture as you coax dust from the pockmarks scored in her paint by the bullet-fierce dust of 9,640 kilometers per hour. Is that the original? Reverence made Martin's words almost a whisper. Of course. Occam gave Mukta a careful caress, as one gives an old dog not strong enough to leap and wrestle anymore. Heart of the family business. Coming up on 400 years, it's never left the Bosch. Martin gazed up through the glass wall to the sky where today's cars, Mukta's swarming children, raced on, invisibly swift until they slowed for landing. So they seemed to appear over the city like eggs laid by the chubby clouds. And the computers? How deep would an intruder have to get to reach them? Deep, Occam answered. Many stories, many tears. Thumps through the ceiling made both glance up, the footsteps of a Boschmate upstairs. How about to reach an interface? Martin asked. The next room has some interface nets. Occam nodded to his left. But they're set-set nets, Cartesian. No one who wasn't trained from birth could get them to respond. Mason. Your security is mostly automated? Humanist. I could have 50 guards here in 2 minutes, 300 in five, but human power is less than 4% of my security. Mason. You think there's no danger this intruder could return and cause a mass crash? Humanist. A mass crash is not possible. Mason. You're sure? Are you disconcerted by this script-like format, reader? It was common in our 18th century. Description lapsing into naked dialogue. To such enlightened readers, all histories were plays. Or rather, one play, scripted by one distant and divine playwright. Humanist. A mass crash is not the danger. The system will ground all the cars if any tampering's detected, and they can self-land with the system dead. The problem is shutting down all transit on Earth for however long it took us to recheck the system. Could be minutes, hours. The sensor told me a complete shutdown would cost the world economy €1 billion a minute, not to mention stranding millions, cutting off supplies, ambulances, police. That's your catastrophe. Mason. Or, at the very least, the century's most destructive prank. Humanist. Utopians? Confess, reader, the name has risen in your mind, too, conjured by stereotype, as talk of secret handshakes brings masons before your eyes, or war brings priests. Martin frowned. Not utopians necessarily, though such mischief is not beyond them. Humanist. They have a separate system. They're the only ones. Mason. Do you think they'd reap a profit if they shut you down and then let the other hives rent out their cars? Humanist. They wouldn't. Mason. Rent their cars? Humanist. They don't have the capacity to put that many cars in the sky. They don't have the reserves we do. They'd be overrun. At Occam's signal, the house summoned its second showpiece, a projection of the Earth in her slow spin, with the paths of the car's flights traced across in threads of glowing gold. Hundreds of millions crisscrossed, dense as penstrokes, drowning out the continents so the regions of the globe were differentiated only by texture. Oceans, smooth masses of near-parallel paths, like fresh-combed hair, while the great cities bristled with so many crisscrossing journeys that Earth seemed to bleed light. Each car's position en route was visible like a knot in the thread, crawling forward as the seconds crawled, so the whole mass scintillated like the dust of broken glass. The display is functionless, of course, a toy to dazzle houseguests, but a humanist Bosch must make some amends for a shabby trophy wall. Humanist. Gold is my system. The Utopian cars are blue, and Romanova's emergency system cars are red. Can you see them? Martin squinted as the end of a baseball game in Cairo made the city blaze with fresh launches. Not a trace. Exactly. I have 800 million passengers in the air at a time, making them compete for 30 million Utopian cars who do a lot more harm than profit. A shutdown helps no one. More footsteps on the stairs above. Occam, a voice called down in Spanish. Can you come help move Eureka's bed? A mango fell behind it. Well, most of a mango. Can you bring a sponge? Busy, Occam called back. Ask Cat or Robin. The click of Occam's boots erased the interruption. I didn't catch your name, Mason. Martin Guildbreaker. His eyes widened as he realized his mistake. I mean, Mycroft. My real name's Mycroft. Mycroft Guildbreaker. But everybody calls me Martin. But I'm not in a cult or anything. It's just one of those nicknames that happens. Occam nodded. And Mycroft isn't an easy name to live with anymore. He was unable to resist glancing at the corner where I sat on a workstool, picking away at a scrubbing robot whose self-cleaning function was not quite equal to the combination of gum and doll hair. Martin is worse, actually, but words died. Martin's eyes had followed Occam's to me. My uniform, my ear, my face. Martin froze. Occam froze. Both held their breath in a kind of stalemate, searching each other's faces as the questions flowed. Does he know? Why does he know? Does he know I know? What can I say when he asks me why I know? I tried to ease it for them, interrupting with motion, though I dared not speak first. I rose and bobbed an awkward half-bow to Martin, reaching by instinct to remove my hat, though it was already on the ledge beside me. Occam caught the gesture, and his face relaxed into the first expression that morning which one could call a smile. Have we both been feeding the same stray? Martin gave a laugh, a quiet one, politely brief, but enough to make his stance less tightrope rigid. So it seems. Good morning, Mycroft. I renewed my half-bow. Good morning, Nepos. Occam frowned at Martin's title, an unwelcome reminder of this invader's intimacy with his distant emperor. Of course, Mycroft was also a familiaris. He nodded at Martin's armband. You know them from that? Yes and no. Martin had no obligation to be so honest. I commission Mycroft frequently. What for? Mostly languages. Hive-neutral translators aren't easy to come by, and a sensitive case like yours may turn up documents in any Hive language, or all of them. I fidgeted with the robot in my hands as I stared at Occam's feet. Nepos Martin is as fastidious about Latin as you are about Spanish, I began, and I do have some functional knowledge of Polyhive criminal law. Occam gave a snort that verged on laughter. True enough? And will you have Mycroft working on my case? An unreasonable investigator for an unreasonable crime? The Mason smiled. I'd be eager to have Mycroft, if you're comfortable with it. If I trust a person with my dirty underwear, I'll trust them with my irritating interruption. Martin blinked. You commission Mycroft Canner to do your laundry? Occam paused a moment, weighing, I think, whether this Mason would be easier or harder to get rid of if he told the truth, or rather what he believed. Mycroft is my sibling Thisbe's lover. They manufacture odd jobs as excuses. He nodded at the robot in my hands. I feigned appropriate embarrassment. Martin's lenses flickered with fresh files. Thisbe Sanir? Occam nodded. I know there are many ways it could be unhealthy, but I watch the psych profiles of my boss as strictly as any other aspect of security. A servicer has nothing to gain by exploitation. Unlike most people one of us could date. Very true, Martin acknowledged. Mycroft is most trustworthy, and dangerous to no one. I'm glad they've found another Bosch that sees that. Occam cocked an eyebrow. Now you've got me imagining Mycroft wolfing down leftovers in the Guildbreaker kitchen. There is not no truth in such speculation, Martin answered with that awkward precision which infects his speech sometimes and makes more sense when you remember he's thinking in Latin. The two men looked me over now, and the surreality of it swept over me like headache, the wrong sides of the earth together, as in some dream when a long-dead friend and some recent celebrity stand impossibly side by side. But this was no dream. If I may add something, members. I waited for approving nods. I think it would help, Nepos Martin, if you told Member Occam that your team isn't Masonic. When you do this work, it's for Romanova directly, yes? It wasn't the Emperor who sent you. Correct, Martin confirmed. In fact, I believe Caesar is not aware of this particular errand. I'm here as a personal favor for President Ganymede. Occam's face brightened instantly. The President sent you? Yes and no, ever-honest Martin answered. Your President is not aware that I'm doing this particular favor at this particular time, but they know me very well, and they've used me often in cases like this. My team and I are not police detectives. Romanova sends us when polylegal tangles require an investigation, but the place is sensitive, high level. A senator's personal Bosch house, or the sensei's conclave, situations where all seven hives need to be satisfied. But the effective hive's privacy must remain inviolate, or the investigation itself might cause more harm than the original problem. We solve things while leaving as many feathers unruffled as we can. When your name came up in the Black Sakura tracker log, Commissioner General Papadelius had the warrant sent to me immediately, to make sure your doorbell wasn't rung by someone your president trusts less. As the mason finished, it was my face, not his, that Occam studied, and I nodded eager confirmation. Occam's curious expression made me bold. If a little of my own opinion wouldn't be unwelcome? I waited for him to nod permission. Now that the hand of law is moving, Member Occam, I think you're not going to get a gentler touch than Nepos Martin's. I've seen their work before. They really do focus on delicate situations like this, turning only the stones that must be turned. You're seeing it already. They have a warrant. They don't have to be this accommodating. You can trust Martin. They're a good person, genuinely good. If you can trust anyone Romanova might ever send, you can trust them. May I show them the paper? Occam paused, and we all heard the scrathump of failed bed moving upstairs. Fine, through here. He gestured to a side door. And I do appreciate your courtesy, Mason, but I'll feel better when I've spoken with my president myself. I led the way from the Mukta Hall to a warmer room with practical chairs, neglected dishes, and an unfinished game of mahjong. As we strayed from the front rooms, no doodling zone spirals and zigzags like those on Occam's clothes flowed over the cushions, the wooden chair backs, even up one wall, like lichens starting to convert a bare island to soil. I think Martin did notice napping Eureka Weeksbooth, visible only as feet protruding from disordered cushions in the corner, but he made no comment, and moved only in my wake. "Your Bosch has 9 members, yes?" he asked. "Yourself, your spouse Leslie, Thisbe Sanir, Cato and Eureka Weeksbooth, Sidney Coons, Cat and Robin Typer, and Ojiro Sniper." 9.5, counting Mycroft. Martin smiled. Any other frequent guests? Our regular guards and maintenance people, plus Cat or Robin, bring a revolving array of dates home. Thisbe, sometimes too. I'll send you a list of recents. We reached the fatal spot. Here it is, Nepos, untouched, just as ordered. I showed Martin the trash bin beneath a corner cabinet where the paper marked with kanji protruded like a flag between an ancient mannequin hand and most of a plastic horse. Martin moved carefully around the bin to let his tracker image every angle, then pulled out a pocket scanner to search for fingerprints and DNA. Is this a household trash bin?
The trash mine delivery bin, Occam answered. There's 10 million tons of dump under the city. Aluminum and plastics mostly, nothing older than turn of the millennium. A lot was hollowed out to make space for the computers, but the city's still mining the rest, and every Bosch house has a right to rent a bot to look for particular types of items if we want. Thisbe has a thing for ancient toys. Martin leaned close.
It's certainly the right kind of paper.
Occam glared at the crumpled sheet as if it were a spider he would squish if not for poison.
Do they really write their articles in pen on real paper? That must take forever.
Actually, members, I ventured, as I understand, they just do it for the notes for the most important article each week. It felt warm, being among men who knew me well enough that I could safely share my newspaper geekery.
What for?
It's Black Sakura's titular tradition, I answered.
The folklore is that the Sakura cherry tree blooms pink because its roots drink the blood of the dead. So the premise is that a dedicated reporter is so steeped in ink their veins would stain the blossoms black.
Occam gave an approving nod. Martin did not, and I caught his eyes straying from the alien characters on the envelope to me. Martin does not acknowledge Machiavelli. When a wrong action will yield a good result, even so small a wrong as breaking the taboo on translating another hive's language, he halts like a parent unwilling to admit to a child that its favorite toy is lost. It is not that he fears dirtying his hands, nor even that the wrong itself deters him. Rather, I think he hates admitting that this world contains such shades of gray.
Occam doesn't mind gray.
Earn your supper, Mycroft. What's it say?
Reconciled to the practicality, Martin scanned the paper's internal contents and brought the Japanese before my eyes.
Don't translate everything. Just enough to verify that it is a 710 list.
He hesitated.
And tell me the last three names. The motive may lie in them.
Occam cocked his head. I thought the big money was people betting on the order of the big seven.
That's the bulk of the money, yes. But the three unpredictable names at the bottom, numbers 8, 9, and 10, are about to skyrocket in celebrity. So if investments can be made, interviews or contracts set up in advance, 3 million is nothing against the potential profit.
Yes, Cardi does get a rush of calls whenever their name makes a list.
Martin cocked his head.
Cardi?
Sniper, Occam answered.
Ojiro Cardigan Sniper.
I don't know that I'd ever seen Martin snicker before, but everyone snickers the first time they learn that the legendary sniper answers to Cardigan at home.
Read it, Mycroft.
I cannot unlearn the skills of my youth. I may let them rot as a retired boxer sets aside his gloves, but I cannot unsee the words couched in the strokes of languages I have no right to know. I feel guilt, if that consoles you, reader, when I eavesdrop unwillingly on Masons or humanists or Japanese Mitsubishi chatting in their private tongues. I can at least do some penance by sharing my skills, on those occasions when translation is a benefit to all.
It is a 710 list, I confirmed. Just names, no notes. The top seven are the standard seven. The final three are...
I wrestled with the less familiar transliterations. Darcy Sock, Crown Prince Leonor of Spain, and Deputy Censor Jiang Su-hyun Ancelet Kosala. Crown Prince Leonor? Occam repeated. Not the king? That'll ruffle feathers. Martin was still leaning close. This has been crumpled around something, but there's nothing inside. His scan was at work, recreating the paper fiber by fiber on our screens, but whatever beginning of a shape the crumpled paper might have traced was erased for me by the scream. Three voices at once, which came through my earpiece at the same moment that it echoed up the stairs from the lower floor. Mycroft! I knew those voices. I would have charged headlong across a battlefield to answer them. Now comes my confession, reader. In the crisis with Carlyle and Bridger, I forgot Martin completely, and did not think to check in with him until I was already in the car, soaring my way across the broad Pacific toward Togenkyo. My pretend affair with Thisbe was the only thing which saved me from questions I could not have answered. Martin was still at the house, combing the room for every hair and flake of skin that might identify the intruder, but finding nothing. After apologies, I asked Martin for fresh orders. I had not felt fear yet, reader. Not upstairs. Not when I found the suspicious stolen paper. Not when Martin came. Now, though, the command he gave made two vaguenesses congeal into one threat, distant, amorphous, but unmistakable, as when, against a background of city dawn and back-alley clatter, one click and one clack come together into the telltale click-clack of a ready gun. And echo won't tell you whether the enemy's perch is left or right or high or low, only that it is near. Go to Togenkyo. Chapter the Fourth. A Thing Long Thought Extinct. The simile of the three insects was originally about knowledge, not wealth. Our age's founding hero, Gordian Chairman Thomas Carlyle, stole the simile from Sir Francis Bacon, the founding hero of another age 500 years before. In Bacon's 1620 version, the ant was not yet the corporation, stripping land and people to hoard wealth within its vaults, but the encyclopedist, heaping knowledge into useless piles, adding nothing new. The spider was not yet the geographic nation, snaring wealth and helpless citizens within the net of its self-spun borders, but the dogmatist, spinning webs of philosophy out of the stuff of his own mind, without examining empirical reality. Bacon's ideal, his scientist, was then the honeybee, which harvests the fruits of nature and, processing them with its inborn powers, produces something good and useful for the world. Our Thomas Carlyle, genius thief, co-opted the simile in 2130 when he named the hive our modern union, its members united not by any accident of birth, but by shared culture, philosophy, and, most of all, by choice. Pundits may whine that hives were birthed by technology rather than Carlyle, an inevitable change ever since 2073, when Mukta circled the globe in 4.2 hours, bringing the whole planet within comfortable commuting range and sounding the death knell of that old spider, the geographic nation. There is some truth to their claims. Since it does not take a firebrand leader to make someone who lives in Maui, works in Myanmar, and lunches in Syracuse realize the absurdity of owing allegiance to the patch of dirt where babe first parted from placenta. But there is also a kind of truth the heart knows, and that is why our age of hives will not strip Thomas Carlyle of the founder's crown. Nor do I mean him any dishonor by calling him a thief. Hive is a stolen name, born from a stolen simile. But the three insects which Carlyle stole from Bacon, Bacon had in turn stolen from Petrarch, Petrarch from Seneca, and Seneca perhaps from some more ancient, swallowed since by time. There is no more shame in reusing such a rich inheritance than in knowing other kings' hands held this sword before you drew it from the stone. Night overtook me on my flight from Chile's coast to Indonesia, or rather, I overtook the night, racing in 2 hours so far around the planet's curve that I half caught up with tomorrow. Togenkyo's lights skitter far across the night-locked ocean. Boats like sparks schooling among the lines of reflected brightness which calligraph the waves for a kilometer around the island. Here, 7 perfect lotus blossoms rise against the sea, glowing from within with clean, warm light like happy ghosts and dusting the ground around their roots with shimmer. Only as the car curves down to land does the eye realize each petal is a skyscraper, blazing with commerce's neon fire, while the shimmer around their roots is the pulsing streetscape of a metropolis. It is a double compromise, this Mitsubishi capital, a compromise between the twin aesthetic loves of Eastern Asia, towers of glass and steel, and tranquil nature, and a compromise among the hive's 3 dominant nation strats, since China, Japan, and Korea all feared to let another host the capital, so the 3 agreed on neutral Indonesia as the hive's heart. The summons gave my car clearance to touch down on the eastmost tower of the westmost blossom, where the Mitsubishi Executive Directorate enjoys the best view of city and sea. My drab servicer uniform felt drabber in these hallways. As March became ever more a lamb, the Mitsubishi were showing their spring colors, time-sensitive dyes within the fabrics of suits. Haori, chagori, and chavani changing, so winter's deep hues brightened to cyans and yellows, while leaves and floral patterns bloomed through simple stripes like morning glories through their trellises. Perhaps you too have felt the itch of rebirth and festivity the Mitsubishi carry to every corner of the earth. Even in islands without seasons, or in Cielo de Pájaros, where March means summer's end, still we all liven with anticipation as the eastern cherries bloom. And why not? Maybe Earth's oldest living poetic tradition, the Asian cycle of plants and seasons, cannot be truly translated. But the cunning of fashion surpasses even language. It is spring in China, Korea, and Japan, so spring everywhere. Not the executive chamber, Mycroft. This way. I followed a soft-footed clerk, feeling fears prickle on my neck as we passed the meeting rooms and the computer lab where I was sometimes put to work, entering instead a Bosch apartment which sat above the chambers like the control room above a factory. The servicer you summoned has arrived, Director. Send them in. I removed my hat as I entered, which fear of recognition forced me to keep on, even in the corridor. We expect promptness when we call. Before the door had closed behind me, Chief Director Hotaka Ando Mitsubishi lashed me with harsh Japanese, which made my greeting bow into a cringe. Apologies, Chief Director. I should have fought harder to break away. I answered him in Japanese, and bowed anew with my apology, but dared raise my eyes enough to count the pairs of legs around me. There were 5 in the room, but 4 wore the familiar deep green of Mitsubishi guards, so for an audience with the chief director, we were practically alone. Black Sakura, you know what's happened? Partly, yes, chief director. I've been assigned to the case. I straightened now, and verified my fears. Directorate guards wear whatever cuts of Mitsubishi's suit jacket match their nation strats. Chinese, closed at the front with braided frogs, Korean tied across the chest like chagari, Indian long and buttoned like sherwani, sometimes Western blazers, or the Japanese style, crossing at the front like kimono. Today, there was no such variety. All Japanese suits with Japanese faces, several familiar. children of executives who held high office in the hive through Ando's patronage. This was an inner circle then, gathered for that special kind of meeting where, if there are bruises afterward, no one will dare ask why. The chief director himself stood in the center, Hotaka Ando Mitsubishi, to use the customary English ordering of his names. Today's suit was blue-black, with a pattern of plain reeds appearing for spring, fine cloth, but no finer than his guards, while his simple shoes and plain short haircut proclaimed the supreme confidence of a ruler so secure he can afford to dress no better than his subjects. He was not always so. In our kind age, no face beside the mayor's is truly battle-hardened, but Chief Director Ando's is at least conflict-hardened. With a handsome severity earned over decades, battling to break the Chinese faction's hold on the chief director's chair. Even our anti-aging drugs, which keep the strength of 30 alive in him as he approaches 60, have not kept stress from silvering his temples. He addressed me in Japanese. "But for you, good master, I shall render what I can in common English." The thief used the counter device. My tracker bleeped alarm as my pulse spiked. "I don't have it," I cried. "I don't have any idea where it is. I don't know anything. It was 13 years ago. I don't have the remotest connection to anyone who might have ended up with it." Only this far into my reflexive protest did I realize I was cowering, my arms bent over my head to stave off blows, although no guard had moved. "Please believe me. I don't know anything." As Director Ando stared me down, I could read in his face the evidence against me massing, ready to draw into a phalanx, my presence at the house, my fingerprints on the paper. "Where did you hide it?" he asked. "Where did you hide the device? Maybe there were two?" Even I could hear the foolish desperation in my voice. "There were not two. There was one. Who did you give it to?"
"No one, Chief Director, no one. It couldn't have been the Canner device."
The words were as much for myself as the director. "The device could swap tracker signals and make someone else's tracker register as if they were Occam Sinir, but it couldn't get through the rest of the security. I don't know what security Black Sakura has, but there are systems at the Sinir Weeksbooth Bash that nothing I know of could get through, certainly not the Canner device. It was only for the tracker system, for swapping two signals, nothing else. It can't have been..."
"Martin sent this to you, too."
The chief director brought an image before my lenses. Martin's scan of the paper I had found in the trash that morning, which I had hardly glanced at among the many messages that had chased me through my ride. The reconstruction was meticulous, rendering the paper fiber by fiber, showing how it had indeed, as Martin said, been crumpled around something. In the next instant, the director filled in that something, the unmistakable, sleek, fish-like, tapered body of the infamous device which the hysterical public never should have named for me. "You had it last," Ando accused. "You know who has it now."
"I don't know. It was years ago. It'll have been sold on to someone else by now."
"Sold?
Did you sell it to someone?"
"No.
Yes, I mean, sort of. I left it..."
Plausible-seeming lies multiplied in my imagination, but as I started to voice one, I could see Chief Director Ando's face tighten. It wasn't plausible. None of this was plausible. Least of all, my innocence, though innocent I was. "I really don't know what happened to it. Please believe me. I was arrested. I don't know what happened after that. The police say the case for the device was empty when they found it, but anyone could have it. Crooked cops, organized crime, kids who stumbled on my hideout, anyone."
"You can't have been that reckless with it."
"I was a child." Ando did not need to do more than glare. Genuine faintness made it easy to fall to my knees before him. "Please believe me, Chief Director, I don't know anything about what's happened. You know I have no way to prove my innocence, but you've trusted me a long time, and I've never betrayed that. I never would. Even this morning, I could have told Martin the truth about the 710 list, but I didn't. His glare changed.
What truth?
That Sunil Sugiyama didn't write that list. I saw the chief director flinch, and I clung to the new topic like a lifeline. Sugiyama always writes Black Sakura's 710 list, but they think the pen should be wielded like a sword, especially the most publicized article of the year. Sugiyama would never have produced anything so uncontroversial, and when they listed the top seven, they would never have referred to you as Hotaka Mitsubishi. They would have included your birth bash name. Hotaka Ando Mitsubishi hissed under his breath, and my tracker stopped worrying about my heart rate. Masami Mitsubishi wrote this list, didn't they, director? I tested. I waited. Masami is still interning with Sugiyama, yes? The chief director scowled down at me, then turned toward the rear of the room, where a partition, patterned with a calligraphic scene of frogs and goldfish holding Congress in a waterfall, separated this outer chamber from an inner one. A new kind of shiver touched me as the partition opened. I cannot date the beginning of the tradition wherein queens and warlords surrounded themselves with fawning predators, hounds, lions, serpents on silken cushions, ready to loose their savagery at the master's whim. Chief Director Ando had chosen a more dangerous predator. Adopted children, 10 in all, fox cunning and ambitious, just finished with school and ready to carve their names into the world. 6 were present in the inner room then, sprawling on the floor like cats, and as the door yawned wider, they watched me, as cats watch a twitching toy they have not yet made up their minds to chase. They all come from one bash, a batch of Ba siblings who lost the older generation and had been scattered to distant foster bashes before the childless Ando Mitsubishi bash welcomed them all. They were just starting to cross from teens to 20s now, and the 3 eldest had recently passed the adulthood competency exam. One donning humanist boots, another a Mitsubishi suit, the 3rd a hiveless sash, but the rest had not yet chosen, so wore only miners' sashes over soft pajamas and the sloppy sweaters their adopted mother knitted herself. Masami Mitsubishi was not among the lounging bossibs, not today. Instead, a different figure rose to join us. Pausing first to set down with loving care the branch of plum blossoms she had been about to trim. Danae Marianne de la Tremouille, Mitsubishi. Princesse de la Tremouille et de Talmont. Sister of humanist president Ganymede Duc de Troyes, and wife of chief director Hotaka Ando Mitsubishi. She wore kimono here in her husband's capital, not the unisex kimono one sees on Mitsubishi streets, but a woman's antique kimono. Birds and blossoms and golds, peaches and blues, the fabric thick with labor like a tapestry, the obi sparkling around her stiff waist like a puzzle box of silk. She approached with the small, shuffling steps which in Japan code feminine, her white hands nested pale against the cloth like doves. So perfectly anachronistic were her dress and poise, she might have been the model for an antique woodblock print, except for her hair, which sparkled in its cage of hairpins with all the rebellious wheat-lush gold of Europe. I will not call Princesse Danae the most beautiful woman in the world, since that title doubtless belongs to some obscure person living happily indifferent to the doors of fame that might be opened by the blessings of anatomy. But I do know who would win a worldwide vote for the face on earth most likely to launch 1,000 ships. What's good luck that we have an investigator so perceptive and so discreet? Danae's Japanese is elegant and beautifully accented, but too meticulous. The over-perfect Japanese of one who learned it in adulthood and remains self-conscious even as the decades mount. Surely Mycroft will protect our Masami? Her words open an aspect of this I had not seen before. The poor young intern, still a minor, just whetting his eager pen, swept up in a storm of probing questions, which bitter politics would whip into a hurricane to levy at the whole bash. Suddenly the wide eyes of the lounging siblings watching from the back room felt like fear. "Do you think this is directed against the chief director, Princesse?" I asked. "I don't know." Danae came to her husband's side. "Do not chide me, reader, for using the gendered husband, when she stands so close, sheltering against him as she gazes up into his face with her brilliant, pleading blue eyes edged by maternal fear. Our age's neutral partner rings false when her every touch and gesture makes such intentional display of wife." "Masami was so excited by this job at the paper, their dream job. I hate to think someone would destroy that just to get at us. I'll do everything I can to protect Masami, Princesse." I said it almost without thinking, or with no thought beyond the desire to drive the sadness from that perfect face. Princesse Danae rewarded me with a smile, warm, her right cheek framed by one stray golden curl, and I relaxed enough to slump back on my haunches. "Poor Masami is quite innocent, but I fear they will seem guilty when the public finds out the truth."
"Finds out what?" I asked. She sighed, brushing back the wayward curl, and the passion rising in my breast split between the impulse to leap between her and the sources of her grief like some white knight, or to freeze that moment like a portrait, so I could feast my eye forever on her face. I should add, reader, that I hold no particular lust for Danae. Rather, her arts, mastery of poise and gesture, can inflict these feelings on almost any victim. And when she sighs thus in the council chamber where the nine directors meet, one sigh can trump 100,000 votes.
"As I understand, Sugiyama pulled out of writing the list just a few days ago and had Masami finish it. But the editor wanted the famous name, so was going to release Masami's list, pretending it was their teacher. Masami is just a junior intern. They had no way to object."
"Of course not," I answered instantly. "Don't worry, Princesse. I'm sure we can protect Masami. I'll do everything I can, and Martin, too. Martin will understand. Martin understands better than anyone how important it is to keep press and public from hounding hive leaders' children. We'll keep Masami out of the limelight. I promise."
"Thank you, good Mycroft."
Danae's smile washed over me like sunlight, and she even reached down with those pure alabaster fingers and stroked my hair as one might stroke a faithful hound.
"What did you do with the kennel device?"
You, distant reader, and I, now thinking back on this scene, with the distance of weeks, we too can see Ando looming behind his wife, watching in calculated silence as this exquisite tool extracts what he desires. But the Mycroft who kneels before her, he sees nothing but those eyes, keen as blue diamond, which slice even as they sparkle.
I never had the counter device, Princesse.
She cocked her head like a bird.
You never had it?
No. I've never even seen it. I only ever had the packaging. I bought the empty box from some arms smugglers. I'd heard about the device from the news back when it was stolen from the lab. Everyone did. I wanted the police to think I had the device so they'd think that was how I was sneaking around. It was just a trick to keep them from looking any deeper.
It all poured out of me. Years of careful silence melted by that coaxing face.
I'd been close to breaking already, really. The truth brought to my tongue's tip by the fear that being incriminated in this theft might cost me my parole. But if Ando's intimidation was a cudgel, Danae was that perfect scalpel touch against the artery that makes the blood flow free. She smiled. What sweet reward, that smile, and chuckled like a teasing child.
"Then why didn't you just say so, you little silly?"
I didn't want anyone to think I can...
Her smile turned from teasing to forgiveness. You can still do it, can't you? You can still trick the tracker system, however you did before? Yes, Princess. Please don't tell anyone. They'll lock me up again. I know they will. But if I'd told them, they would have taken the means away, and I didn't want to lose it. I need it in case I need it someday to help somebody. The mercy here was that she instantly assumed my somebody meant her own Bash. Of course. She gave my hair a second stroke. You did very well to protect that ability. I'm sure it is of great service. Thank you, Princess.
Danae turned back to her husband now, freeing me to look down at the hat in my hands. The sight of it kicked off one of those chains of association which leads in an instant through five links to realization, or, in my case, horror. What had I done? How could I have betrayed so much so fast? The threat of the device, of being implicated in this theft, it had seemed overwhelming, but I was innocent, and Martin would have believed me. I was not innocent of deceiving the tracker system whenever Bridger or other necessity required. Now and forever after, Danae could hold that over me. And so could Ando. I cursed myself inside, although looking back, I forgive myself now. She was irresistible. Remember, reader, though I use archaic words, I am not from those barbaric centuries when men and women wore their gender like a cockerel's plumes, advertising sex with every suit and skirt. Growing up, I saw gendered costume on the stage, in art, pornography. But to see it in real life is unbearably different. Her shallow breaths within constricted ribs, her round French breasts threatening to overflow the low Japanese silks. Here, as Ando wraps his arm around her waist, the costume makes me see them in my mind. The husband wrenching the kimono back to bare the honey-wet vagina. You see now, reader, why to tell this history, I must say he and she. Danae is a thing long thought extinct, reviving out of time ancient venoms perfected by 100 generations of gendered culture. We around her, from my weak self to the gaping guards, grew up with no inoculation against this pox we thought our ancestors had vanquished. Movies and histories gave us just enough exposure to learn these ancient cues, weakness without resistance, and we can no more unlearn them than you could unlearn your alphabet when facing an unwelcome word. Ando took control now, stepping forward so his shadow fell across me. You will write up everything you know about the smugglers you bought the packaging from. 13 years ago is not beyond the possibility of tracing. Yes, Chief Director. I hold you responsible for this. If you had made it known in the first place that the device was still in dangerous hands, I would have worked to track it down. I expect a prompt solution if you want me to conceal this error from the Commissioner General. So fast, the price of my indiscretion. I understand, Chief Director. I will take responsibility. Should I report my findings to Martin or to you? He weighed that for a breath. Did these smugglers have a nation strat? Japanese, Chief Director. I suspect the original thieves were Japanese as well. I hesitated, but it was better now to say things openly. Like its makers. His face both darkened and calmed. Then bring the report to me first. Martin, I trust, but within the strat, my own inquiries will open more doors than a mason's. Yes, Chief Director. He peered down at me. Who do you think had the Canon device built in the first place? Please, don't call it that. More firmly, who had the Canon device built? I kept my eyes on the floor. I know you are innocent, Chief Director. That isn't what I asked. I squeezed my hat.
I believe the project was ordered by the previous head of the Japanese voting bloc. But your predecessor's guilt doesn't make you guilty.
It will in China's eyes, he snapped. In India's, Korea's, in the other hives. The accusation alone